Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your We From a Small Town of Music News and Criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
Here nails match my Birkin. On block, keep lurking.
Real hot girl.
Yeah. Bomb. Yeah. Explosive. Bow. It's soaking. I close this. I'm stomping on so much hard. I'm knocking out more your tokens. Yo, pound. She regular. Yeah, I'm high.
That's that Pressurelicious. It's Megan Thee Stallion and Future off of Traumazine. This week we're talking about Megan. The last couple of years, the new album, the last mixtape, the post-WAP career jump, and all the additional conversations that surround Megan and her career. We are going to be joined in just a little bit by Monka Barkhante, who is from Rolling Stone, and Heaven Hiley, who is from Pitchfork, and we are going to get in the weeds on the music. I will say something that I always get frustrated about is I feel like there's not enough conversation about Megan's music. I want to hear and read more about the in-depth thinking on the types of records that she's been making. And we are going to go down that road heavy later this episode, which I'm very excited about. Before we get to that, I just want to talk briefly about the live show Thursday, September 15th. Which you will be hearing this before, hopefully, at Gertie in Brooklyn. We are sold out. Y'all bought tickets extremely quickly. Not gonna lie, I'm very pleased and a little bit surprised. Tickets are gone. That said, we are probably gonna do a few walk-ins. That's number one. A little bit TBD. I'll probably post something on Instagram that day once I have a sense of what we're able to do walk-in style. The other thing is, the taping is going to be at around 8 for about an hour or an hour and 15 minutes. We're going to hang out a little bit afterwards. So if you just want to come and say hi, come closer to 9 or 9:30 and come hang out, have a drink with us, a pastry, whatever all food they're going to have. We want to make it as open and inviting to everybody. We just need to keep it relatively tight for the duration of the taping. So if you want to try to walk in, that could be an option, but at minimum, come hang with us. I will be there. Karen will be there. Joe will be there. Pedro, who is here right now, Pedro will be there. For those of y'all who bought tickets, I'm incredibly excited to see everybody. Joe's excited. Karen will be there. The excitement, it's up and down. It's hit or miss. Ganscore is a fickle beast, but Karen will definitely be there. So please come and be extra embracing of Karen. That's what I have to say about that. But enough about Popcast Live. Enough about that, because it will be extraordinarily live when we do it. Okay, now switching to Megan. We are here. We've got big shooters on the show today. Monka Barkhante is here. She's a staff writer at Rolling Stone. She wrote the Megan cover story that came out a couple months ago. Hello. First time on Popcast. Welcome.
Hi. First time. Love it.
It's going to be great. Big episode. Also, first time. Two first-time guests. This is good. We don't get this a lot. Heaven Hiley is here. Heaven, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled. Heaven is the editorial fellow at Pitchfork, reviewed Traumazine. And came with it at a level of criticism that I think Megan deserves to be taken this seriously and also discoursed about. So we're going to get in the weeds today. There's a lot of narrative, musical narrative about Megan that we're going to talk about. There's a lot of meta narrative and like ambient noise that kind of gets in the way of, I think, sometimes good musical conversation about Megan. But we're going to get into that as well. And so basically, we're going to take Megan from the WAP era forward. And one thing that I think we can all probably agree on is in that era, there has been a lot of extra musical concerns that have been going on with Megan. And to my eye and ear, that often gets in the way of conversations about Megan's music. What do y'all think?
I think the arena of female rap has just been really dominated by one or two voices, like for so long, that when Megan came in has been this kind of mobilizing force to bring a lot of these female rappers together in terms of like collaborations. And even if she doesn't collaborate with them like sonically and like musically, she puts them in her visuals that I think people have perceived that as her being phony in a way, because I feel like rap is a genre where people have to be on different sides, that like if Megan collaborates with someone who has beef with the other person, people are like, she is phony. But she seems very sincere in wanting to just collaborate with so many female rappers, even ones that are like up and coming, that I think people aren't used to that. And then just with, of course, with the whole thing with Tory Lanez and people intentionally disregard the pain of Black women, that Megan Thee Stallion in a genre where Black women are not taken as seriously and their pain, our pain isn't taken as seriously, she's become this kind of spectacle in a way that I don't think she intended, especially since the grief that she's been through, that this has been like hoisted upon her to be like this figurehead representing Black women's pain. And she was just like freestyling in the parking lot with like her friends and all these ciphers. And now she's this voice of the social cause. That's, it's a really big thing to ask of someone, which is why this project is difficult for her to construct and like digest.
The burden does feel unfair, because I feel like even just the fact that in order to talk about Traumazine and also to talk about where Megan is musically, we have to wade through all this other stuff that is narrativized around her and imposed upon her. And that seems just fundamentally unfair to any artist, really, to be like, we are going to deal with your meta narrative and all these terrible things that are happening to you and around you before we even are talking about the art. And that's something that feels like it's not a unique thing to Megan. I think this happens elsewhere, but it does feel particularly pointed with her.
Yeah, definitely. I think also I like, probably shouldn't do this as much, but I like seeing people's responses to like the reviews that I've written. But when I saw,
you'll get over like, that. Yeah,
I saw a response that I saw to Traumazine is that, so there's a line in the review where it's like in one of the descriptions where it says that Megan gets political, and then someone was like, yeah, of course, because that's like exactly what we want for Megan Thee Stallion. And I think like sarcastically, but like in the beginning of her career, she really was this, her thing was bad bitch music that made you feel good. And she has like a bunch of just women twerking in her video. And it's this feel good mood that she creates. Like you listen to Megan at like a party to have fun with your friends and stuff like that. And I think that it's a burden that's placed upon her. And I think that she has it in her to create a concept album where she does digest this in a more fleshed out manner. I just think it's such a sharp transition that she's made. You even see those kind of Tina Snow-esque songs that pop up like with Budget with Lotto and like those really feel good songs. And I just think it's such a sharp thing. It's a sharp transition that rappers usually make when they're more at a mature stage in their artistry.
You mean like further into their career?
Yeah. This is not like a direct comparison, but I think that as a concept album about grief and trauma and intergenerational trauma, I think with 444 and with Kendrick Lamar, they've had time. Kendrick Lamar was away for years and Jay-Z has always been teasing his retirement. So they've had time to digest and grow older and had time to really sit with those emotions and flesh those out, that I think she doesn't have that time. And, you know, everything going on with her label, she just doesn't have that time or the space to be safe to really fully flesh that out.
And also, I mean, two other things. One, the obvious, gender. That's one. But also, Kendrick, this is particularly true of Kendrick. Kendrick is not discussed in the discourse, broadly speaking, the way that Megan is discussed. He is not the now Kendrick, of course, goes out of his way to like disappear to a beach somewhere, but he is not the subject of all these kind of threads. Monkabar, let me ask this, because you spent a fair amount of time with Megan for the story, and I want to get into a few things that you talked about in your piece, but something that I feel like I want to go in on now is, how mindful did you find her to be of the ways in which she was spoken about in these kind of like meta conversations and the ways in which that external conversation trickled into her art, her creativity? How much was she thinking about it? How openly did she talk about it? Did she express anxiety? Like, where was her head at about that kind of stuff?
She's super, super aware. She's like, she's 27. She's super online. She, even though she, you know, expressed to me that she makes an effort to, or she was making an effort at the time to be mindful about how much time she spends on the internet. But she said to me, she'll be online having a good time cracking jokes, talking to her fans, like, or more like observing jokes. Like, we had a conversation about like a meme at the time that she thought was really funny. But then that is always interrupted by 15 to 20 people in her mentions saying things that are disrespectful at best and horrific, like at worst. And so I think that she's like super conscious of that. And her narrative with this album was like, I'm trying to tell my own story. I'm trying to ingest all of the noise around me and still stay Megan and show you who I am. And so I feel like one of the things that I think is enjoyable about Traumazine is that I was expecting vulnerability. She's said this before on previous albums, like with Suga, the EP, it had been marketed similar to Traumazine as a step towards vulnerability for her. But one of the things I was thinking about today is I think that is relative. So I think when a normal person hears someone say, oh, I'm going to be really vulnerable here, you might think that they're going to divulge very intimate details about their life. But I think that what that means for her is I'm going to acknowledge that I hear these things and I'm going to inch towards letting you know a little bit more about how I feel. So like one of the things I like about Traumazine is that like the vulnerability is in like the anger. Like it's not like a sad album per se. It's very heated. Like she's mad, you know?
Should we play a song? Should we just play NDA?
Yeah.
All right, let's listen to a little bit of NDA right now, because I think this touches on what you're talking about.
That really rap. I be quick to check you like a pep. Killer, all I need is a pencil and a pad. Let me get the beat so they remember who I am. Damn. What a real bad. I'm finna bring real bad. Way inside a real bad. Free the guys, bring the real bad. Damn. What a real bad.
I don't know. I feel like I read a Mary J. Blige interview many years ago. I can't remember where this was or if it's fiction at this point. It's like it's a fuzzy memory. But Mary J. Blige almost having like the opposite issue of Megan, saying people expect me to always be like pure catharsis, to always have these big emotional, I'm spilling it all, I'm laying it all on the ground, I'm tearing myself apart, I'm so in pain, and the limitations of that kind of quote-unquote vulnerability. And I think a lot of people think that's when you're describing vulnerability or emotional intimacy in art, you're thinking something like that. You're thinking someone who's just like absolutely like showing you their insides. But I think your point about Megan expressing that kind of internal sentiment is different. It's not that she's not doing that. Even though there are a few moments on this record that kind of touch on it, generally speaking, I think you're right. It's a little bit more a question of degree and texture than it is radical shift in overall approach.
In rap, a lot of people talk about like their haters and they're like these like negative forces in their lives, but often it's like very nebulous. It's very general. But like with Megan, if you're following, you know exactly what these forces are saying to her and what she's up against.
Do you think it's possible to come cold to Traumazine, not knowing any of that stuff, and experience it kind of the way it's meant to be experienced? Or do you think the way it's meant to be experienced is completely contingent upon the listener being also extremely online?
That's a really interesting question.
Thanks. I just made it up. I literally just freestyled that.
I think because that is like a common trope in rap, adversity, haters, being better than other people in spite of them feeling like they are better than you. I think because of that, like you could come to it blind. But I think that having that context, if you're a fan of hers, it makes you cheer for her. And I think that's one of the things that when you were talking about like the critical discourse around Megan's music, I think it might be hard because we are so aware of all the like things that have seemed to have happened to her. And because she is so talented, the things like the holes in like the output sometimes don't feel worth harping over to people. I wonder if that's the case for people. of almost all of her projects, I think that there are lulls, or I think that there are songs that don't need to be there, but there's so much good in them. And that combined with knowing so much about her life, like, I wonder if that changes the way that the critical discourse around her has existed.
I also wonder if, to some degree, like, the sheer volume of that other conversation, it's not so much that it makes people approach the art a little more tentatively, as much as I wonder if it makes people approach the art really at all. Like, I sometimes worry with people, and this is not a Megan specific thing so much as it is people who engender a tremendous amount of online conversation. Oftentimes, I think just their art, good, bad, positive, negative, indifferent, whatever, doesn't get the level of attention that we would give to someone. Heaven, I'm glad you mentioned Kendrick, because you just think about, like, that week that the Kendrick record came out, and it's just everybody's got 2,000 words. Everybody's just, I have this art. I want to talk about this art. There's other folks who come out with records that could be just as interesting, and they don't, for whatever reason, trigger the same kind of level of thrill for the art analysis. And I worry that Megan falls into that a little bit.
There's so much discourse that's been happening online of people saying really vile things to her, knowing that she's gone through so much grief and trauma, that when you engage with this body of work that has trauma in the title, and when she's talking about, like, the death of her mother and being, like, really vulnerable and, like, opening up, even though sometimes the style of the production doesn't match, like, the poignancy of her words and, like, the gravity of what she's talking about. It's, I know when I, like, first got assigned the album, I was really excited, but I obviously hadn't heard any of it. But when I listened to it, and I was like, I have to engage with this critically, because I'm a huge fan of her, and I know that she has a better album in her, even if this is like a stepping, this is, even though
big facts,
she's like stepping more into it, like, critique being, especially amongst Black women, critique being an act of love and wanting someone to do better in their art form, because you are a huge fan. I'm glad that I was assigned it, because I felt like I really understood. I understood the lore of everything and the gravity of the situation. So I wasn't, like, dismissing what she went through. But I think one thing that I really wanted to see more of, which I didn't really consider the rage element of it also being an act of vulnerability, because I think we're so used to this kind of battle rap cadence in rap that it doesn't seem vulnerable, but that's, like, such a profound perspective that I hadn't considered. I really wanted her to let us sit in the discomfort production-wise. There's two songs that she really delves deep into the grief and trauma she experiences. They're Anxiety and Flip Flop, and I think they're, like, back to back. And Anxiety has this, like, looping yodel in the background that was really distracting. And then I think Flip Flop is where she really, it's a closer tonal fit to the gravity of the situation and grief and trauma that she's talking about. But even the chorus is very sing-songy, and it's like she doesn't really allow us to sit in that discomfort with her. And maybe it's because she doesn't really want to sit in the discomfort, because it is relatively fresh for her timeline-wise.
Let's listen to a tiny bit of Flip Flop to get a little bit of a taste of what we're talking about.
Breaking these, been the type of another wanna be. Let's be real, y'all wasn't talking that pimp. See, y'all start listening to me. Put you in my beans, this my trick. Find me a sucker, I hit me a lick. That's your business if you wanna go these and still be broken.
I think one of the challenges of just, like, internet, Twitter-led discourse, broadly speaking, is even though there are so many voices and there are, it's such a vast, like, infinite playing field, certain frameworks do tend to coalesce pretty cleanly. And I do think the notion that, like, vulnerability should sound this way, intimacy should sound this way, like, I think when someone is operating differently from the prevailing ideas, it can be jarring. And I think the point that was made earlier about that rage and that somehow being a little bit more serrated, that being a sign of vulnerability, like, that's bad. I agree, totally, very, very, very powerful. Especially, I think, for a rapper like Megan, because I think we should kind of get in the a little bit in the weeds on Megan as a rapper. here's a person who to me is very classic, like in the 90s to like maybe early to mid 2000s mold, like very like sturdy, square shouldered bars, very clean cadences, not a lot of disruptive patterns, certainly not leaning on melody. This is very much like a rapper that I grew up with generationally. And I find one of the struggle points is when I think the production is a little bit more modern leaning or a little bit more melodic oriented. It doesn't always suit what I think her natural gift is. And Mankabar, we were talking a little bit about this earlier on the phone, this sense of like, is it okay if she just remains this kind of rapper and is good at being this kind of rapper and choosing beats, hopefully, that suit and amplify that particular skill set? Or does she need to be all things to all people, all styles? Is that the sort of like end game for her?
I think she is aware that she shines on this like almost like boom bappy or like very like Plan B. I heard Plan B in the studio before she performed it at Coachella and debuted it, and my jaw dropped because the beat is so simple, but like still so hard hitting that I could really pay attention to what she was saying. And I could see her like riding it. And like the things there's a line about her like ex being somebody who would sleep on the couch while she's working, and all these digs, like these very specific disrespectful digs, like really, really shine. But she also likes other types of music. I think that there is some conversation, like especially around like even like when she first debuted into the mainstream around like 2019, like people being like, all right, I want to know more about Megan. I want her to go deep. I want her to experiment. I want her to try new things. And she even has a line on Fever where she says, they want to know about me. They want me to tell my story. The only thing they need to know is I'm in love with money. Like she kind of asserts that she's going to do the thing that she does well. But like from talking to her, I learned that she just likes other types of music too. Like Rolling Stone did a list of the 500 greatest songs. She was a voter. And on her ballot, I had her ballot and we talked about her ballot. Benny and the Jets by Elton John is one of her favorite songs. Creep by Radiohead. My Humps by like Fergie. And like these are such varied types of music that I could see her just as like a human being not wanting to do the same thing all the time. It's just that there is a thing that she excels at, and there can be variants like to that, but it is hard as like a listener to process a song like Don't Rock Me to Sleep on Good News or Star with Lucky Day on Traumazine. It doesn't feel as fun to listen to because it doesn't feel as authentic to what we fell in love with about her.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break right now. Back in a minute. Let's listen to another track from Traumazine, one of my favorite tracks. It's a good collaboration with Pooh Shiesty, Free Pooh Shiesty. This is called Who Me. Freak, send a picture of this. Let him get a sneak peek. Oh, if you a freak, break, put this on repeat. He say he gon' pop a perk and me to my knees.
Oh, I pop mine on McGee. You want to show me you a real freak? I need a freak. Gon' tow my AR, have my gun, pills and weed for me. Backseat of that Jeep, you gotta ride. I hate some weed. 30K on a vacation, need some head. That time we hit the beat, our friendships on the hand.
Hi, I'm Megan Loram, the director of photography at the New York Times. A photograph can do a lot of different things. It can connect us. It can bring us to places we've never been before. It can capture a story in a universal visual language. But one thing that all these photographs have in common is that, you know, they don't just come out of the ether. We spend a lot of time anticipating news stories, working with the best photographers across the globe. These are photographers who have spent years mastering their technical craft, developing their skills as visual chroniclers of our world. You know, getting certified as a scuba diver and learning how to shoot underwater to document climate change, or tremendous cardiovascular training in order to ski on the slopes next to Olympic athletes. This is an effort that takes tons of time and consideration and resources. All of this is possible only because of New York Times subscribers. If you're not a subscriber yet, you can become one at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Okay, we're back. Heaven is here. Mankabar is here. More Meganology on deck. All right. This feels like a great time to talk about Something for the Hotties, which came out last year, which I was listening to again the other day. And Pedro, you're going to have to believe me, but it's just this record goes. And Pedro, I apologize in advance, but let's play just a brutally bleeped version of Kitty Cat from this record. And I pray that we can even get through two bars without a significant bleeping. When they let me get rich, I started getting money and I got on my Beyonce. Them hoes got a sign of NDA to come around me. I'm feeling like Khalees cause I'm real bouncy. Here, kitty, kitty, here, kitty, kitty, here, kitty, here, kitty, kitty, here, kitty, kitty. Here, kitty, kitty, here, kitty, kitty, here, kitty, here, kitty, kitty, here, kitty, kitty. Don't hide that tail. This is Parking Lot Cypher Megan. This is Radio 2017 or 18 or whatever it was, Radio Freestyle Megan. This is a person who takes the context, a pre-established context of a beat, a familiar beat or a familiar style of beat, definitely in an older model, and says, I know how to attack this and I know how to decimate it in a way that's like very specific to me and who I am as a rapper and who I am as a person, and not sacrificing any of that, and also doing it in a way that probably no other rapper, female or male, would do. It always feels very specific. And this record, mixtape, album, whatever you want to call it, I just feel like end to end is incredibly strong because it's not varying from the specific gift that is her greatest talent. It's just, let's lean in on that 100%. And I wonder how y'all think about this tape or whatever it is in relationship to Traumazine.
I think the thing that she got to do on Something for the Hotties, because it was understood to be like a collection of like unreleased tracks, like some new songs, some like freestyle-esque music, is that the structure of them, I feel like, got to be like less traditional. Like none of these songs, like the average length of a song on Something for the Hotties is like 2 minutes. So, you know, there isn't any hooks to be repeated. It doesn't need to be an earworm or like the logic. This doesn't need to be a full artistic production the way that a song that's going to go on the radio might need to be. And so I think that gives her a lot of freedom to do what she does best.
Heaven, what did you make of that tape?
I definitely agree with all of that. And I think freestyles are definitely her strong suit in Traumazine. The Southside freestyle, I think, was so amazing and really positioned her as this really vanguard of not only Houston rap, but Southern rap as a whole. But Something for the Hotties, the punchlines and bars were definitely a highlight. I really love Tuned In Freestyle when she says, this probably needs to be bleeped out, but when she's like, kill him to send him to the gulag. I think that is something that I've never heard anyone say before. And it definitely did stop me in my tracks.
I had a good lull in the car the other day when that, I'd forgotten which one that was on, but yeah, I definitely had a good moment with that.
And also Megan's piano, the line where she's like, see my ops linked up in a picture, everyone looks busted injured. I think you just really feel grateful that you are not on the receiving end of any of those like disses. But I feel like this is like similar to like, I don't know, like the person I can think of is like Nicki Minaj, where the bars are so disrespectful that you're like, oh my gosh, am I like a good person for like laughing at this? But it's just so creative. Who raps about gulags? That's so like just very witty of her.
And I think that's one of her genuine strengths, apart from just being like a good bar for bar rapper. I think it's one thing to be like, yeah, I can rhyme, quote unquote, complex rhyme, like 2, 3, 4 syllables at a time, like whatever. Like that's, a lot of people do that. But it's the inventiveness. It's the unexpected. It's the kind of like the eyebrow arch moments. I remember like when Nicki first came out, for example, you'd always end up arguing with kind of like old heads and they'd be like, Nicki's not a good rapper. And I'd be like, what are you talking about? Literally, Nicki is better than like your top five. Like, actually, what are you talking about? But for some reason, like the packaging, like certain generation of cat couldn't get past the packaging. Whereas I think those cats probably would really understand the Megan stuff. Like they'd be like, oh, absolutely. Like this makes total sense to me because it's very straight down the middle with like just enough twist to make you be like, oh, like well, you said that. And that's good. And frankly, in the current hip hop ecosystem, if we're going to like rap caviar it, not a lot of rappers rapping like that, period. Very different era. Do you guys think Megan would be more conventionally successful, you know, Billboard hit type successful? Is this an era problem? Or is she just arrived 10 years too late or 10 years too early? Is that sort of a little bit of what's in play? Because I think her radio and chart success, in so much as those things matter, hasn't quite matched her level of acclaim and renown.
I wonder if that's it. I keep thinking about something that someone said to me. John, when you were talking about like these old heads and how they felt about Nicki Minaj, and I'm assuming they were mostly men.
yes.
I was talking to someone who is a man who was comparing a Megan to like a Doja. Doja Cat is incredibly successful as a rapper. Of course, she like treads that line of rap star, pop star that is a source of discussion, but you know, she has tons of hits and like she has a lot of mainstream success. But like this man said to me, Megan is so like forceful about her sexuality, where when I think about Doja, the things that she's saying are pretty like out there, but her voice is really light and it can be really melodic. I'm thinking about a lot of the songs on like Planet Her compared to Megan's sexuality, which is like in your face, dance on the now you've been served, like. And I wonder if it is an era thing, maybe, but I also think we're in a new era of just women in rap being popular and in multitudes that I don't think has existed before in hip hop or pop music.
Not at this breadth, you know?
Yes, exactly. And so I think that the gender of it all, I think also has a lot to do with how people are taking her music. We were talking a bit about how Megan exists on like the Twitter timeline. And like, because of who I follow a lot of Black women. I follow like Megan is like the biggest star. There's so much rallying around her, even before all this bullshit that has happened to her, like Fever era, like people were so hyped for that mixtape and they were so hype about the rollout and the potential Hype Williams video and all these different things. There is so much energy around her. I really wonder what the gender divide in her listenership, like how that affects how popular she is.
Do you worry at all about the intensity of that fan energy? Occasionally what I think can happen when people are super beloved on the internet especially, is it builds this house, and the house is really big, but like maybe the support system is not totally there yet. And I have on occasion been concerned that maybe it might have been better for Megan's like overall musical arc if she had another year out of the spotlight to like kind of like hone not just the craft, because I think she's a really good rapper, but the song-making aspect of it. Because I worry with all this attention, you have to feed that monster, because it's going to want music, it's going to want videos, other content, it's going to want news, it's going to want gossip, it wants all these things. And I worry that they haven't always totally been in line with each other. And sometimes I think people benefit from a tremendous amount of online attention, and sometimes I think it could be strangely limiting, possibly even infantilizing in some ways. How do you guys feel about the way in which Megan's musical evolution has lived side by side with how the evolution of how she's talked about?
She came up on social media, like people dig up really old tweets of her marketing herself, that I think it's hard for her to remove herself from that social media. Like her core fan base saw her come up on social media with these ciphers and like her kind of, I don't know, maybe grassroots isn't the right word, but this kind of like grassroots marketing that she did on herself. But I think that a huge problem that she is dealing with in her personal life, but also in her work life, is that she doesn't really know who is there for her just for the good times and who is there when she's like struggling with like grief and stuff. Cause I know a lot of people who were fans of the Fever era, like Big Ol' Freak and all these really feel good songs, didn't listen to Traumazine because they were like, this is not what I want from Megan. And this is not something that's like enjoyable to listen to. And I think when you make a bold artistic choice like that, you're going to miss some people. But I think she's just so connected with her fans that I think she really wants to be. And I don't know. I think because we're in an era where, you know, TikTok kind of runs the music industry, that it's like there's this fear that if you disappear for a little bit, they're going to move on to the next up and coming female rapper that's bolder, is more exciting. And I think she really feels that fear. I mean, just being a Black woman, you feel that disposability everywhere. And I think Megan has definitely felt that disposability of being in, you know, a life and death situation where people have been constantly gaslighting her. And I think that she is struggling to disappear. And I mean, with this album, she does a good job of showing how she's been using partying and like alcohol and sex and like all these things to distract from her grief. And I think that kind of, it just mirrors her real life where she's kind of using all the success in her work to distract from her grief. And I don't know, maybe if she like disappears for a little bit and then comes back with a concept album with collaborators that she actually trusts and some time to like digest everything that's going on. But I think it's, she's at a really critical moment in her career where if she takes a break, I think she feels like people are going to forget about her, which is, it's a valid fear to have.
I was thinking about Megan songs that have been hits. And I would actually say most of them are collaborations or remixes. Savage Remix, the Dua Lipa record, WAP. Solo ones, like standalone songs, yeah, Body, Savage before Beyonce shows up, Thought. But a lot of the biggest records are collaborations. And you talked about this having your review a little bit, that when she's trying on different production modes that may be more conventional in the current pop or pop R&B, pop hip hop landscape, they don't like quite sit on her quite as well. I wonder, what's the thing that could potentially bridge that gap? Do you think, is it something where her flow becomes more adaptable? Is it something of there's a producer out there who knows how to make it work and she just hasn't found that producer yet? What is the thing that is going to get her to the place of, I'm Megan, this is how I rap, this is what I rap about, and also I've got top 10 hits, which are in line with the fact that I'm one of the 10 most famous people in pop music.
There's an interview where she talks about how people criticize her flow and how it's like not changing. I think it's a fair thing for her to say that this is just how I rap. And other people have pointed out that like people don't really ask men who rap to change their flows. The thing with her trying to cross over with the Sweetest Pie song, honestly, when it first came out, I thought it was Dua Lipa's record. And I thought that Megan was featured on it. And then when it was on her album, I was like, oh, I didn't know that this was her song. And I think when she collaborates with like Southern women, like with Lotto on Budget, it sounds so amazing. Like there's just this kind of like their voices gel.
Let's listen to a little bit of Budget, which is on Traumazine, which is Megan with Lotto.
Bro, get the cane, get the crutches. I give them face, give them body, give them lashes. What's the price? Lotto. Lotto don't do budgets. Talk like your buddy. Trip shot can't pronounce big jets to Phuket. I'm like, keeping it. Ain't no discussion. I'm no percussion. Back up.
She gives effort into whatever genre she's trying to fit into. Like with, what's that song? Where she has like a house influence on Traumazine.
Oh, her?
On her, yeah. She really changes things up with like her flow and she really matches it and she kind of gets like a bit theatrical with it, which I really like. I don't know what exactly it would need to be, but I think her collaborators, like they could be more collaborative.
Also, I'm reminded of, did either of you read the interview around when WAP came out? And I may have mentioned this on podcast before. So if anybody listening remembers me mentioning this, just ignore me for the next minute. There was an interview right around when WAP came out with Brooklyn Johnny, who is Cardi's manager, talking about the recording of that song and kind of the back and forth process, because obviously this is like a COVID thing. It was like a nonlinear recording process. But the thing that really stuck with me was, I don't think he was trying to be shady, but I feel like he was basically like, we had to cut or rearrange the Megan verse and put it in a different way than it was delivered. And I think he said something to the effect of, we were nervous because that's an artist's art and you don't want to like mess with their art. But also like we had a vision kind of, and we felt like it was the better choice. And ultimately she was signed off on it and it became the record that it became. But I found it interesting that just that one additional interjection, that one kind of additional set of ears somehow created a slightly different kind of record that still very much sounds like a Megan record. Like I would have never known, you know what I mean? Like when you listen to that song, at no point do you think, wow, someone really like chopped up a Megan verse and made it into this. It doesn't feel that way. And yet it did have that extra layer of kind of attention and disruption to it. And so I was struck by that because I think it felt like a potential answer to this question of what's the bridge between where Megan is and the records on that scale. Like, maybe it's one additional pass. Maybe it's like a little bit of fearlessness about mixing and matching versus that feel done and rearranging them a little bit. I don't know, but that always stuck with me. I felt like an uncommonly frank interview about the creative process of a major pop record, which I just don't think we get that much of generally speaking. But I remember thinking like, huh, interesting, notable. You know, like, take note of that.
I have thoughts as
go
having
in.
Spoken, having spoken to her about whose opinions matter to her. Because when I went into one of my first conversations with Megan, I was wondering, like, do you read reviews? Do you know what the critiques are of your music? You know, not like of your life, but like of your music. And she expressed to me that really before her mom died, the only people's opinions that mattered to her was her mom, her manager, T. Ferris, who has a storied career with Swisha House, pretty much her engineer, Source. And those are pretty much the three people's opinions that really mattered to her. And today, that circle is pretty much the same, or was the same at the time that we spoke, with maybe like I don't know if she would fully admit this, but she did say, you know, her and her boyfriend Partisan Fontaine, who is also a rapper who co-wrote on WAP, among other songs.
Shout out Party. It's not in your story, right? It's in the New York Magazine story where Megan says, not my part.
No, that's my story.
Oh, that's your story? Okay, cool. I wasn't sure.
Yes, I was just about to say okay. That, but not her part.
I like that. I was like, great parenthetical. A+.
But I do think that is a possibility. I mean, I'm sure she's running things through not one, but two labels. But if those are the only people's opinions who really matter to her, and she does say that she pushes herself to re-record because of her mom's spirit. You know, her mom would challenge her to do things again, to try and make it better. But if her circle is that small, then I think you guys raise a really interesting point about how her music could be elevated with a different set of ears, with a different set of comments, with one more run in the booth. But there is something that I've been thinking about that we were talking about a little bit earlier, just like in terms of what Megan says about her process and making music. Because earlier you guys were talking about why she hasn't taken a break and maybe why that might be valuable for her. And I think part of it could be not necessarily wanting to be forgotten, but unfortunately it comes back to a lot of the traumatic things that have happened to her and not wanting to be overshadowed by conversations about her. And like having a stake in what that narrative is and having a stake in what those conversations are like. Because if she were to like disappear for a couple of years, she's still in court. She's still in multiple cases with 1501, her label that she is trying to distance herself from. And then, of course, with Tory Lanez. So she can't disappear in that regard. So how could she, or why would she disappear?
Oh, interesting.
Or take time to just grow as an artist musically?
So you think that she doesn't have the option? Like, you were talking about Kendrick before, and, you know, Kendrick's on a beach wearing, like, a knit hat and riding a beach cruiser bike, right?
I love how each time this description of Kendrick on the beach gets a little more.
I've been workshopping it. But because Kendrick doesn't have this kind of meta conversation about him really in the same way that Megan does, you think he has a freedom to disappear that Megan, it's not even afforded to her, is what you're saying. So then why would she even attempt to take it when it's not going to be allowed her to take it? She's not going to be allowed to take it.
Yeah. I think that is something definitely worth considering.
Did she talk about the need, basically, like, as all these things are happening, essentially part of like her processing of it is to make music about it in the moment? Is that something that y'all talked about?
I can't say for sure if she said like in the moment, but just a pretty common idea in music that like it's therapeutic for artists. And like she talked to me about like she'll listen to beats in the shower and she'll like stick her wet hand out of the shower to like hit play or rewind a beat or something like that on her phone while she's freestyling in there. And so I think that it's such a part of her and it's one of the ways she knows best to express herself that it would be really hard to distance herself from it. I mean, like, could she just make music, keep it in a vault and release it like a year later? Like, sure. But like we were just discussing, she's still going to exist in pop culture, whether or not she's making music, because of the legal troubles that she's dealing with.
Is that ultimately, we've circled around this question, but like ultimately that continuous level of exposure, that perpetual scrutiny, is that an inescapable enemy of her art?
I don't know that it has to be, because I think that it can serve as a fuel We were talking earlier about the anger. Like, I think that's palpable. Like, had that been paired, like Heaven has brought up, with more interesting production, a more pared down album, a more concerted effort to concentrate an idea, perhaps. Like, I can think of the songs that if she would have gotten rid of on Traumazine, that probably would have made that album stand a lot stronger.
Yeah, tighter.
Yeah, like tighter, you know? And maybe she could have released them as singles or done whatever she wanted with them. But like as an album with a bit of a concept behind it, it could have been so much tighter. And I think that the things that have happened to her charge that album so much that it was almost there. So I don't think it's necessarily like an enemy per se. I think it's just one of those things that she'll have to learn to like wield. I don't know a ton about anime, but it kind of like in my head, I'm seeing this like anime character on this journey to learn how to use their like superhuman strength for like the better or like, you know, like to not like to use it in a controlled way to like harness it and use it in a targeted fashion. I see that for Meg. And at the end of the day, one of the things that I said in the conclusion of my piece is she's really only been this famous for like 3 years. It doesn't feel like it, but that's not really a long time. I want to say she is as known and as discussed in rap as like a Nicki Minaj who has been doing this for over a decade.
Doubtless. Doubtless. Monkber, you're about to A&R this next project with these ideas? You're getting points on the Megan anime Netflix film? Like, what's going on? Heaven, as we're wrapping up, do you feel that the conversation is necessarily an enemy of the art, or do you think that there's a way to embody that and be like, yes, I acknowledge this discourse is happening, and you know what? I'm going to refract it through everything I'm doing.
I do think there is a way to do it. Maybe it has to be a more like fully fleshed out concept album if she's going to like commit to a concept album than just do a concept. I think even Good News, although I mean it runs the same problems of not being like cohesive throughout, but just like the beginning of it with Shots Fired, I was like, that's a good intro. Like that's like, it's a good concept album. Visually, sonically, it's okay. We're addressing how the media has warped like a really traumatic experience that you've had. But another thing that I wanted to like just talk about briefly about why she can't disappear. She's had so many brushes with death in terms of her own and like people around her that I think she's just hyper aware of her own like mortality, that it's like she is trying to, as someone who's had a parent who's died when I was young, it's very consuming. You're like, oh, if like my parents died when they were young, it's like, how much time do I have left? And it's, she's trying to make this legacy when she's just very quite fresh in her own career. I think she has a line in Flip Flop where it's along the lines of, you don't really know what I'm going through unless you've had both parents, something along the lines of, you can't really empathize with me unless you've had both parents like die. And it's, she's very young and she doesn't really have that support system. So I think that's also a big portion of it. But in terms of this always being a part of her narrative, men will have one thing happen to them. They'll have one person break their heart or they'll have one feud and then they'll talk about it for like 13 albums and like no one really says anything about it.
Name names.
Well, okay, one woman from Houston broke his heart and he will not stop talking about her. Like it's like, why can't women also like have that? But I mean, there definitely is like better ways to sonically do it. But if she wants to have this chip on her shoulder and do that, then it's, I'm going to support her.
To go out with, what's a good old Megan song? Let's unburden ourselves of the last like 2 years of conversation, right? What's a pure old Megan song?
I know one. It's on Make It Hot, which I think is like one of her very first mixtapes. Like it's her first mixtape on streaming. And there's a line, the song says, "You bitches look like McDoubles."
Okay.
I think the song is called Make It Hot. Yeah.
All right.
It's the title track.
All right. So we'll go out with that. Okay. That is our show. Thank you to Monkber. Thank you to Heaven. I appreciate y'all. Big conversation. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Get on the Discord, tinyurl.com/podcast Discord. Facebook group, tinyurl.com/podcastfacebook, and chop it up in conversation. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, yada, 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 whatever it is. If we are going to see you at the live show, I'm looking forward to that. Come up, say hi, come kick it with us afterwards. We will be around just loitering and come see us. Our producer, as always, is Pedro Rosado from Head Stepper Media. We will be back next week. Megan Thee Stallion, OG style. Make it hot.
Hey, yeah, make it hot. Come up in this, make it rock. Put it in your face, make it pop. These know Megan needs top. These ain't really by action. A lot of these hoes just acting. I'll rub a bitch up, that's traction. And put a trash ass back in the trash can. And I'm a bad motherfucker with the back hand. And if you come too close, I'ma crack in. See, I already peep where you back in. You ain't even hear me when I came through the back end. There I go, with the back end.